racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Believe it or not, one tournament down, only 48 to go. Hi, I'm Bob Bubka. So proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr., also known as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. And many thanks for joining In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. We can be found on all your favorite digital platforms, so please hit that subscription button. And Jay, before we even talk golf, and I know what a sports fan you are, and something took place last night that I think is pretty cool. Of course, I have a personal connection to it, but I'm going to share it in the grill room anyway. I saw footage of Mike Yastrzemski, who happens to be the grandson of Carl Yastrzemski, who played 23 years for the Boston Red Sox, as you know, plays now for the San Francisco Giants. And the Giants were in Fenway Park last night. Carl is there to greet his grandson, show him around the park just a couple hours before the game, and then tells his grandson, I'm going to go watch it on television. I don't want to put any additional pressure on you. Second time up, Mike Yastrzemski, deep center field, home run. The first time that a Yastrzemski ever came to the plate in Fenway, Jay, 1961. I mean, it's just an incredible story.
You know, sometimes things just go right. And, I mean, with the fact that he's with the Giants, and I know there's movement in Major League Baseball, but the likelihood of him being back at Fenway Park where his grandfather played and being there that night, and Yaz a part of those great teams with Freddie Lynn and Jim Rice and so on, and the history of the Red Sox and how much love there is for Carl Yastrzemski in Beantown. I mean, it doesn't get much better, Bob. I mean, despite all the rigmarole that's out there and, you know, the bombing of oil fields and calling people names and this and that, it is kind of refreshing when you have a moment like that, and that was a magical sports moment last night.
Well, I never shared this with you, but I will now. I think Yaz spent 23 years trying to get over the disappointment that when he faced me in high school, he failed to get a hit. I only faced him once. And
I was going to say, did he walk? Did you walk him?
No. He did get a pretty good piece of the ball. We were playing in a field that didn't have a fence. I think it was measured at about 1,300 feet that he hit it, but I did have the center fielder in prime position. So he flew out, and I was proud to be at Cooperstown the day he went into the Hall of Fame, and I said, I don't know, Carl. You're going in the Hall of Fame. Couldn't even get a hit against me. You almost kicked my butt down the street. But just a great
glad
story.
Glad you told the story.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Unbelievable. Anyway, let's move on to golf now. But I just thought that was,
it definitely is worth mentioning.
Yeah. So now the first tournament of the season has played out. Probably no surprise. What do we get right out of the box? A new, fresh face. Certainly not fresh in the world of golf. He was number one ranked amateur, as you know, Jay, for 48 weeks. He's 20 years old. He's from Chile. First player ever from Chile to win on the PGA Tour. We got a new young gunslinger.
We certainly do. We've known about him. We've watched him progress. He's been getting closer. You wondered if it would be more of a European Tour type of thing that he made his decision to call the PGA Tour his home. Joaquin Neiman is now a winner on the PGA Tour. And I just wonder when you're in the class of Rory or Justin Thomas or Dustin Johnson or Brooks Koepka, and you look at the last couple of months, and you look at Matthew Wolf, and you look at Vic Hovland, and you look at Colin Morikawa, and here's Joaquin Neiman. And I wonder for the Bryson DeChambeaus and, you know, the other players out there that have to take notice. Now, granted, this wasn't the greatest field. A lot of guys just coming off the Corn Ferry Tour playing. But look what this guy did, Bob. I mean, he went out and he shoots 65, 62, and then over the weekend he decides to go 68, 64. Under the heat of Sunday, he shoots 64 to get his first tournament victory at the Old White, at the Greenbrier. And now, I mean, he elevates himself to another category and does it at the age of 20. And seems like, you know, this is a guy, I mean, how many people would turn down the opportunity to play in the United States Open and the British Open? He did. He gave up his amateur status when he was exempt for both. That shows you the kind of confidence. I mean, a lot of people would have said, hell, I'm in the U.S. Open and the British Open. I may never get in another one. Not this kid. He said, I don't need to go play in those as an amateur. I'm ready to play as a pro. And he's proved us right. And it'll be very interesting, Bob, to see his progression throughout the season, how much he's going to play in the fall now that he's got the victory. It gives him the opportunity to pick and choose spots where he wants to play and not want to play. A huge, huge win for him.
Yeah, and let me just put a bow tie on what he accomplished. In the last 95 years, he's only the third player born out of the United States to win on the PGA Tour before turning 21 years old. The other two, Seve Ballesteros and Rory McIlroy. Enough said. Let's give a listen.
Paul Cotton.
Yeah, let's give a listen to what Joaquin had to say after that unbelievable victory.
It's been unbelievable. Yeah, from my whole country, they were watching me. I got a couple of texts from them. So I'm really happy to get the trophy for my family, for my coach, and everyone back there in Chile. So, yes, unbelievable. Couldn't get any better. From the beginning of the week, since the first day, I felt with a lot of confidence coming off like a 3 weeks off. So I feel like fresh. I was playing really good. I practiced a lot with my coach that off season. So my game was feeling great and mentally it was awesome. So I was just feeling like I was going to win this tournament since the first day. I was in a really good mindset. Yeah, the Greenbrier has been awesome with me. I mean, has treated me really well. It was the first tournament I played on a PA Tour. I was an amateur and finished like 20-something. So it was an unbelievable place. I wanted to come back the next year. And as crazy as life it is, next year was getting my car here in this event. So. And then this year, that it was the year after I won my first PA Tour event. So it's just crazy. I mean, I love this place. I've been playing really good golf here, so I'm going to be here a couple more times.
Jay, I think he certainly doesn't need any help on the golf course, but maybe not doing that great with social media. He said the whole country was listening, and he got a couple of texts. maybe not. I'll have him get in touch with Jay Randolph Jr. Nobody knows more about social media, but
he can buy a lot of followers, Bob, with that money he's won.
Wow, just a nice kid too, and you know, and I've been thinking lately that there's been a big influx of all these young players. You know, you rattled off the names just a couple of minutes ago, and golly, every one of those names you said, Jay, is probably more impressive off the golf course than they are on the golf course. That doesn't seem to be possible.
I don't know what it is. It's maturity at a young age that we didn't have on the PGA Tour in the 70s and 80s and into the 90s. I mean, you know, this is uncharted territory, like you said, Bob. I mean, we knew guys, and when they came out, they just wanted to keep their card. These guys are not thinking about that. I mean, Bob and I know guys that battled, you know, and would have four good finishes a year, thank goodness, and barely keep their card. And they were fighting, and they were good players. but it's that mentality. And 64 in the final round with the pressure of winning on the PGA Tour. This is stuff that is unusual. I mean, it's becoming a trend, and maybe it's going to become more of the norm. I think a big part of it, as our executive producer Janice knows, is the influence of the AJGA at a young age. The college programs have gotten stronger. There's more amateur tournaments. There's more junior tournaments. So these young men and women are prepared in a different way than I was or many of the fine players in the world were, leading out of college. I mean, you know, it wouldn't surprise people if it took guys 4 or 5 years to get their feet to, you know, settle, to be grounded, and then get a win. Not anymore.
Well, I had a good friend by the name of John Adams. He only played out there 18 years, 457 events, never tasted victory. But that wasn't even a surprise back then. That was the norm. Let me ask you this, because you were a damn good stick in your day. What about equipment? You think the advancement in today's technology is helping these guys perform at a higher level quicker?
I mean, I got to think it is. I mean, you and I and our listeners that played in the 70s, 80s, and really 70s and 80s or before, when you'd hit a bad shot with a wood golf club, you'd feel it in your hands. And that bad boy was going to go right or left, and it was going to go far right or left because of the spin, because of the golf ball, because of the wood driver. I mean, I don't think there's any question. And I'm not taking anything away from these guys. They got to play with what they're playing with. But when they get up on the tee, it doesn't seem like there's any fear. And you knew if you necked one, you're going to feel it in your hands. I think the shafts, the whole thing, the ball, the equipment, the teaching, the training aids, all that stuff has made it much more advantageous for the golfer today on the professional level, because I still see a lot of guys chopping it around out at Normandy.
Yeah, what about Victor Hovland? I think he's the best of them all. He's had 17 rounds in the 60s on the PGA Tour. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's unbelievable.
And all the other guys are winning. Now, Vic's going to get his. Don't you worry about that. He's only been a full-time player, technically for a week off the Corn Ferry Tour. But if you look back on the stretch he got to play in the summer, Bobby's had 17 consecutive scores in the 60s. I'm going to say that again, 17 consecutive rounds in the 60s. I mean, at some point, you shoot a 71 or you shoot a 75. He's taking a break from the PGA Tour. This week, he's going to play in a signature event over at Wentworth in England, the BMW Championship. And he's a guy, you know, I mentioned Joaquin Niemann earlier that we saw play some European Tour golf. Victor Hovland, it's going to be interesting to see, depending on what he does, how long, you know, how much does he play on the European Tour? How much does he play on the PGA Tour? We saw Rory make the decision, especially for this year, his year of consistency, to play on the PGA Tour, and he was rewarded with winning the FedEx Cup. But, I mean, that's, again, I mean, it's somewhat staggering for people that have followed this game this long to see what these young guys have done in the last 5 or 6 months. And my buddy Adam Long was right there knocking on the door going into Sunday. He had a bad final round but finished tied for 14th. So, and this week, a little later, we'll tell you about the Sanderson Farms, where last year we got introduced to long-hitting Cameron Champ. So, exciting time in the game. We've got a great mix of young players. We still got a couple of vets like Phil and obviously Tiger that are still out there fighting. And then we got that group of great players that lead the world each year in the World Golf Rankings.
All right, let's move on here. Jay, let me ask you this real quick. New rule on the PGA Tour this year. The cut has been to 70 in ties for the longest time. Now they're going down to 65 in ties. You like the rule change?
I guess. I understand it. because they would get that bubble sometimes, especially on Saturday, where they'd have the large cut and then they'd make a Sunday cut. 65 is a good number. They're all zillionaires that are out there. So it's not like, oh gosh, I missed the cut. How am I going to make my car payment? So I think it's okay. And I think the other side of it, Bob, is, you know, the less golfers out on the golf course, give them a better opportunity for a better pace of play. And that's one of the things that a lot of people, including myself, like to kind of point at as a problem with the PGA Tour. Maybe that'll help some of the weekend play, and especially in some of those areas where the sun becomes a factor, sunlight becomes a factor this time of year and in the winter in February in Florida.
All right, let's pause for a moment or two so you can learn more about the oldest public course west of the Mississippi. Of course, I'm talking about the Normandy Golf Club in St. Louis. And when we return, we'll take a look at that youth movement we were talking about.
You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, and we're heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at the Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Great to have you with us. Don't forget, you can find us just about on any platform. Lock it in. Listen to us every week. You can find me on Twitter at STL Golf Geek, and you can find the VOG, the voice of golf, Bob Bubka, at Bob Bubka VOG on Twitter. And Bob, we just spent a segment talking about the youth movement, and it just continues to roll on the PGA Tour. This year, this week, we have a 17-year-old Californian making his debut this week at the Sanderson Farms Championship on a sponsor's exemption. His name is Akshay Bhatia, and he played in the Walker Cup 2 weeks ago in Liverpool. He's in high school. He's homeschooled in Wake Forest, North Carolina. I bet my man Jerry Haas, the coach at Wake, is all over this kid. Born in California, he's already had an incredible amateur and junior career. I mean, here's a perfect example of another one coming. Now, he may not be ready this week. I mean, this is the kind of situation where normally guys would shoot a couple of rounds over par and miss the cut but get a taste of it. But I don't know. I mean, you know, he decides to turn pro at 17. Callaway gives him a big offer. Something's going on.
Well, I would have loved to have been in the kitchen when he said to his mom and dad, not going to be in school next week here, Mom. I'm going to be playing in the Sanderson Farms Championship, and that tournament has come a long way. I'll never, ever forget the struggles it had early on. And matter of fact, I think one of the highlights of its early years, Roger Maltby opened up with a brilliant opening round, and then it was thunder and lightning for the next 3, 4, 5 days. They decided to call the event, made it an 18-hole event. Roger got the first-place check of $4,500, and he was asked, After he got the check, did he think it was fair that he won that much money playing only 18 holes? And Roger said, quite frankly, I don't think it's a lot of money. Not even going to pay my bar bill this week.
And that's pretty accurate. If you ever run into Roger at a pub, make sure he's buying, because he can. He, if we ever have an Olympic drinking team, he's going to be the coach.
Point well said. You know, some other golfers turned pro as teenagers, and they had pretty good careers. How about Seve Ballesteros? He was only 16 years old, and within 2 years, he had won a European Tour event. He led the European Order of Merit, went on to win 5 majors, including 50 worldwide wins, played on 8 Ryder Cups. Who could ever forget? Certainly, Seve Ballesteros, one of the greatest guys ever to play this sport of golf.
You look at some other guys, Bob. You look at Justin Rose. Now, granted, Justin, after he turned pro, struggled for a while, but has gone on to win majors, or a major. Rory McIlroy, Jason Day, Sergio Garcia, all before the age of 20. Same for Spieth, who won the Masters at the age of 21. Now, we've seen some other players that, you know, for maybe every one that we talk about on the positive side, you got people like Ty Tryon, David Gossett, Casey Wittenberg, Kevin Na, who's had still a wonderful career. I mean, the guy's made 30 million bones. So it can go both ways for guys, but it certainly seems like in the last couple of years, really the last decade or so, the guys that have come early have been ready and done pretty well.
All right, let's move on quickly to a little preview of that Sanderson Farms Championship. It's a big-time event, 500 FedEx Cup points. Now you get an exemption into the Masters. The field seems to be getting stronger. I have to congratulate everybody down in the state of Mississippi for keeping this PGA Tour event alive, especially all the good people at Sanderson Farms. Best chicken you can buy anywhere in the world. They're a big-time event now. Cameron Champ's going to be playing down there. Jay Ryan Armour, Bill Haas. Hey, congratulations to all those good people. You know, they worked hard, and this tournament was on the threshold many times of being eliminated from that PGA Tour schedule, but now it's on to stay in a long-term contract. I think they're all set through 2025.
And similar to like we saw going back to the Greenbrier last week, and you're going to get a taste of there in Houston, places that need to have tournaments. And now with the way the schedule is set and these young guns wanting to play early, you can sometimes get a mix of the young and the old. I mean, you got Brant Snedeker, you got Stuart Sink, and Zach Johnson still out there trying to get it done. Now, we do have a lot of rookies. 18 of 21 rookies are going to be playing, and that gives you a taste of what this time of year is like. But, hey, 500 FedEx Cup points, 2-year exemption if you don't already have one. There's a lot still at stake every week on the PGA Tour, Bob.
And it's not only now the PGA Tour. How about the ladies, the world of professional golf on the female side? That Solheim Cup, absolutely compelling, right down to the very last putt. It just didn't get any better than that, Jay.
No, and in fact, it was hard for me to, in all honesty, I felt like I knew more European players than I did American players. But it was a heck of a finish. They couldn't have scripted it any better. And if that's your cup of tea, the LPGA, then you just had an unbelievable time watching that tournament. It was fantastic. It's time for another short break. And when we return, Bob will chat to themorningread.com's Alex Maselli about everything, including the Solheim Cup. The mouth that roars was there. So we'll learn more about that when we return. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, on Stitcher,
iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you could just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy, well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Joining us in the Grill Room, Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read. So much has transpired in the world of golf since last time we spoke. Quite honestly, I don't even know where to begin, so let me just throw a dart and see where that landed. Well, okay, it's West Virginia, Greenbrier, the emergence of somebody that on the surface we'd have to say is going to be a superstar, the first guy from Chile ever to win. He was the number one amateur in the world for 48 weeks, so he's not an unknown quantity. What do you think of Joaquin Neiman demonstrating unbelievable talent, winning on the PGA Tour for his first victory by 6 shots? Some incredible stuff, Alex.
Well, I mean, first of all, Bob, anytime you went on the PGA Tour, you deserve a big pat on the back. It is just not easy. I don't care what the event is. I don't care what the field is. You know, and the fact is that Greenbrier, which is one of those places where, you know, there's low scoring all the time. Ask Kevin Chappell, ask Stuart Appleby, who both have shot under 60 there. It's one of those places that you can score. So if you're Neiman and you're leading after the third round, you're thinking, okay, I got to go out and shoot a number today because I can't just sit back and, you know, rest on my laurels because these guys are going to be coming after me. And not only did he not rest on his laurels, but he went after it and, you know, won by, as you said, won by six. So, look, the guy was a good player coming out of amateur golf. You knew that. You don't get the number one in the world, even though the rankings are a little skewed. You don't get the number one in the world unless you are a very good player, and he is. And so now – you get that under your belt, you get that win under your belt, and now you just start cruising. And, you know, this week at Sanderson Farms, if you look at the odds, he's the favorite to win there. So it just shows you how quickly these things can change from a guy that hadn't won 2 weeks ago. Now he's the favorite to win a second in a row.
You know, something else happened at the Greenbrier, and I have not seen this mentioned anywhere, but I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that Kevin Chappell became the first player on the PGA Tour to break 60 in one round and not break 70 in the other three rounds. How do you do that? I mean, you break 60 one day, and then you can't break 70 in the three following rounds.
Well, Bob, I mean, it's a fickle game. I mean, Kevin Chappell's coming back from, he has come back from injury. He's been out for a while. You know, obviously, he had 9 birdies in a row, so that was pretty good, and that was what set up the round of 59. But, you know, I mean, he's just coming back. A lot of things can happen. So I'm not suggesting that isn't true in what you're saying, but I don't look at it and say, you know, how does that happen? You know, look, a guy like that who's been injured, I think you can kind of understand how maybe he'd have some struggles.
Yeah, he's a very talented player, by the way. I think if he gets really healthy, he can make some noise out there. We heard a little bit of noise from somebody that's been awfully quiet for a long time. If we go over to KLM, and see that Sergio Garcia comes out on top. To me, it came from left field. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. Wasn't thinking that. Obviously, he was leading after three rounds, so you'd set himself up. But still, you got to finish it off. And, you know, since he won the Masters, he hasn't done a lot. Certainly sniffed a couple of winner circles, but that's about it. He hasn't really done much. So to win KLM, I think, was interesting. He's not playing. I'm at BMW this week. He's not BMW. So we'll see what he does with the rest of the season. But, you know, he's got Italy to come. He's got Italy. He's got, you know, the three races, Dubai events, either in Turkey, South Africa, or at Dubai. I'm sure he'll be in Dubai. I don't know about the other two. So it'll be interesting to see what Sergio does. But obviously, if you win like he did, you probably want to play more. And he doesn't like to play this event, so he wouldn't be here. So I expect to see him playing, you know, 2, 3, 4 more events before the end of the season.
That's good news for golf. I mean, when he's in full song, he's got certainly has a wealth of talent. All right, we saved the big one. You were there. Your reaction to the stunning is the only word that I can come up with to the Europeans winning the Solheim Cup, first time since 2013. A long drought, but certainly a thrilling contest. And if nothing else, it certainly was good for ladies golf. I was impressed with it. You were there. Your thoughts?
Well, I think the last 30 minutes were incredible. There's nothing that would have topped that. So I think that was clear that was very, very good. The first 2 days, where I think were marginal at best. I know the wind and the weather was really bad on Saturday, but when players take 5.5 rounds to play golf, it's unacceptable. No matter what I keep reading in these emails that I get about how I'm not factoring that in, considering that the captain said on Friday night, not Saturday night, but Friday night, how slow the groups were. So, I mean, I thought that was kind of interesting, but yeah, I thought I was surprised the U.S. didn't win. I mean, in that 30 minutes that was out there, the U.S. was winning, thought they were going to win. Then I thought they were going to retain the cup because they were the holders of the cup. And then they lost the cup in that 30-minute time frame. And I'm sure that the 12 American players and the assistant captains and Captain Julie Inkster are probably still scratching their head a little bit about how that got away from them, because that's clearly what happened. It just got away from them. And you know, you got to tip your hat to, you know, Suzanne Pedersen for sure, not only because she made the putt, but, I mean, she had a bad drive. And she got herself, she rectified that, got herself back in the fairway, hit a very good wedge shot into the green, and then had a legitimate chance at birdie, which she made. And, you know, that's the important thing. You can't let one shot, you know, screw up your round or your hole, and she didn't do that. And she knew how important it was, and she got it done. And, you know, that's, you just can't really talk about how important that is to a team and to a group of countries like Europe. In 2 years from now, when they're going to have to show up in their Inverness and play that golf course, which is not going to fit their eye at all.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing too. Suzanne Pedersen gave birth to her first child. She's 38 years old. Child's two. She makes that putt within minutes. It seemed to me that she makes that huge decision that she's going to retire from professional golf. I mean, the dream of any athlete, Alex, and you've certainly been covering golf long enough, covering sports in general, since your days when you were the phenom as a high hurdler, reports indicate, you know, the desire is always to go out on top. I can't even begin to imagine anybody going out any more on top after making that putt that decides the Solheim Cup.
Well, I mean, I think you could look at John Elway, who won 2 Super Bowls in a row, and after the second one decided he was done. So, I mean, that's an example. But by the point being, I understand what you're saying, and I agree, and I think she already knew either way she was done. She was not coming back. I mean, she did this for Katrina Matthews, European captain. Katrina must have gone to her and said, look, I need you. I need your veteran leadership on the golf course, not on the side of the golf course. And I think that's why she went ahead and made her a pick, and Suzanne Pedersen agreed to do it. So, I mean, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, kudos to her. The likelihood is that if Katrina Matthews is not the next European captain. It's really up to her, I think. If she's not, there's a lot of people looking at Suzanne Pedersen as maybe the next captain for the Europeans.
Speaking of captain, I heard while I was watching the telecast, and maybe I heard it wrong, Laura Davies, one of the assistant captains for the European side, I thought I heard them say Laura Davies has never been a Solheim Cup captain. So two parts. If that's true, why not?
Yeah, I don't really. I don't know if that's true or not, Bob, to be honest with you. And why not? I don't know. Maybe we should start with why was Larry Nelson ever a Ryder Cup captain? If you can answer that question, then we can start answering the question about Laura Davies not being a Solheim Cup captain.
Well, we'll have to put our research department on that. We have noticed other outlets lately have been a little loose with details. even Morning Read sometimes dipping into that pool of a loose reporting. But anyway.
To make up for anything we've done before, let me just give you a little tidbit. So I had alluded to the fact that there was a lot of slow play going on at the Solheim Cup. On Sunday singles, the first single group out was Daniel Kang against Carlota Segunda. Now, first of all, Carlota Segunda from Spain is one of the slowest people I've ever seen in my life play golf. And that's universally, everybody in the press room said the same thing. So why they put her out first, they didn't really understand. But anyways, bottom line is that we get to the 16th hole, and Daniel Kang is one up on Segunda. And Daniel Kang is looking at a birdie putt of about 15 feet. She takes an inordinate amount of time to hit the putt. In fact, she takes what I'm reporting to be around 70 seconds. So anybody who knows the rules of golf knows that anything over 40 seconds is a slow play violation, or they will be timed. Unfortunately, in this particular case, both Segunda and Kang had already been on the clock once. So any time that they would be found to be going on the clock again would mean that they would get either a stroke penalty if you were playing stroke play, or loss of hole if you're playing match play. So in Kang's case, she lost the hole on 16. Now, the oddest part about all this is that the LET and the head LET official is unwilling to say she lost the hole because of a penalty. His position has, and I've interviewed him and wrote the story, his position is that because the way the process worked is once he is notified that there was a slow play penalty that required a loss of shot, or loss of hole, I should say, he then has to notify both captains, Captain Julie Engster, Captain Katrina Matthews, which he did. But after notifying both of them, there was not enough time to stop Segunda from trying to make her birdie putt, which she actually did. So because she made her birdie putt and she won the hole through her play, they never penalized Danielle Kang. They told both the girls, or women, I should say, on the 17th tee what happened. And his response to me was, if Segunda had missed her putt, history would have been different. But they have still not, it's not been reported anywhere. No one has reported that this occurred.
Well, I'm compelled to file a report right now that you're guilty of slow play in telling that story. I mean,
it requires a lot of information, Bob.
It was a lot of information. Hey, thanks for our journey to some unusual events, certainly in the world of golf last week. We appreciate your efforts and look forward to talking to you soon. Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.